I wanted a few drinks to brace me before I had to go into the Munda. So I headed toward Mickey's on Mayfair Hill, among the gay nightclubs and high-priced fetish boutiques. Mickey's is a quiet place, an all-night restaurant where trouble never starts, because it's staffed with wares. Pretty much any night you can find a few nightsiders drinking or stuffing themselves with human food, or just sitting and having a cup of coffee. If you're on the night side and you're legal, you're welcome in Mickey's. Even if you're not so legal, you're welcome, as long as you pay your tab and don't start any trouble. I was heading up Bolivar Street to the foot of Mayfair when something brushed against my consciousness, and I put the Impala into a bootlegger's turn, headed back and around the corner onto 18th. I zagged the Impala into a half-assed parking spot in an alley and was out of the car in a flash, my senses dilating. The reek of the thing I was hunting smashed through my nose, and I felt rather than heard its footsteps moving fast and moving away. I bolted out into the street, plunged into an alley on the other side, and scaled the side of the building by tearing my way up the outside of the fire escape. I vaulted over the side of the roof and began to run. I leapt. Etheric force pulled through the suddenly blazing scar and hit a tenement rooftop going full speed, barely rolling to shed a little momentum. Glad once again that I wear leather pants. Denim can get shredded when you're going this fast. I don't wear leather because it makes my ass look cute, you know.
Fuck, this thing's quick. Watch it, Jill. Cross street coming up. You can head it off if it keeps going in a straight line.
But of course, it couldn't be that easy. I landed hard in the middle of 29th Street, the shock slamming up through my hips and shoulders as I ended up on one knee, concrete smoking and puffing up dust under the strain of my sudden application of force. Two blocks down, an indistinct quadruped shape. The streetlight had burned out, squeezed down into the road itself.
Oh, shit. Please don't tell me it did what I think it just did.
Things were about to get interesting.
The son of a bitch went down through a manhole. Ugh.
The manhole cover lay off to one side. Dents in its surface I didn't have time to examine. I also didn't have time to drag it back so a car wouldn't break an axle in the hole. I just leapt, dropping down through the hole with arms and legs pulled close, bracing myself for whatever waited at the bottom, and hoping I didn't hit anything on the way down. Liquid splattered up to paint the crumbling concrete walls. A new and interesting smell of waste threatened to knock me off my feet. Mixed with the gagging stench of the thing I chased, it was a heady bouquet. I slid a knife from its sheath and noticed something strange. The smell of the thing was different. It didn't reek of hellbreed, just purely of sickness and fur. The silver in my hair and against my throat didn't start to burn. Mikhail's apprentice ring on my third left finger didn't prickle with heat.
No time for questions.
The liquid turned even soupier as tunnels began to branch off. I followed the worst smell.
This is foul. Why doesn't it smell like hellbreed?
Branching tunnels. A left, a right, a soft left at a four-way intersection.
Does this thing know where it's going? Is it running blind? Or luring me into something?
The sludge started getting deeper, and the tunnel slanted downhill, covered in gunk, stinking to high heaven. There was something dead in the water. I reached a wide, deep chamber with a cleaner smell. A faint green glow bounced off the water's oily surface and dappled the walls. Above, pipes tangled, and several different round openings led off in different directions. For the second time, maddeningly, the smell just quit between one step and the next. I cast about frantically, trying to catch the thread again. Every nerve in my body tightened at the sound. To top it all off, the charms in my hair shifted, tinkling, and the silver chain at my throat began to burn. Mikhail's ring heated up, too. The knife blurred back into its sheath, even as my blue eye scanned under the surface of the world and found nothing. The smell was gone.
God damn it. I really hate this sort of thing.
I backed up a step or two, and there it was again. but it was fading under the onslaught of fresh water lapping into the chamber. The ability to mask a scent so thoroughly was pure hellbreed.
And hellbreed means possible nasty surprise lurking somewhere. This would be a really good time to get out of the water, Jill.
Unfortunately, there was nowhere to go but one of the pipe openings.
God alone knows what's in those.
My guns cleared leather in both hands, and I turned in a full circle. No use. Whoever it was, they were gone. The heat drained from my silver. The scar on my wrist prickled, working in toward the bone. Unhealthy heat spilling up my arm, jolting in my shoulder as I pulled force through it, worked into taut, humming readiness.
God damn it! Shit! Shit! Fuck! Motherfucking cocksucking fuck on a cheese-coated stick!
The splash came from behind me. I spun as etheric force swirled with me, both guns trained on one particular pipe, big enough for something very nasty to fit in. A glimmer, down low, green, blue, and flat, like an animal's eyes at night. My fingers tightened on the trigger even as I sensed another presence and half turned, one gun locking on the first target, the other onto the second.
Come out and play, shitheels. Whoever you are.
Jill?
What the hell?
Jill, don't shoot. I'm coming out with my hands loose. Dominic's with me.
One gun lowered slightly.
Harp?
Harper Smith slid out of the second pipe. I twitched, amped on adrenaline and oh so close to pulling the trigger. She's tall. Wares usually are, even females. She moved with the fluidity and precision of a cat wear. Long, dark hair pulled back in two thick braids. Wide, liquid dark eyes, and a mouth that always seemed just short of merriment below an aristocratic nose and wide, high cheekbones. She was beautiful in the negligent way almost all wares are. She hung for a moment, full length, from a slimmer iron pipe, then curved to land on a larger one. Her battered canvas jacket flapped briefly, showing her sidearm, and the feathers braided into her hair fluttered as she cocked her head, examining me. Her mate, Dominic, peered out of the same pipe she'd been in.
Hey, Kismet.
His sandy blonde hair was as long as Harp's, but pulled back and bound in a club with leather thongs. His eyes glittered briefly, too, and I caught a flash of the straight line of his mouth before he withdrew a little, into shadow.
Put the iron away, will you?
The terrible two of the Martindale squad.
What the hell is the FBI doing out here? And two wares without a hunter? That means a ware problem.
I promptly turned my back on them, both guns pointed at the first pipe.
Dom! What are you guys doing out here? And is that your fucking friend? If it is, you better speak up now before I ventilate him.
Easy, Hunter. Don't make me take that gun away from you.
Come and try it, Cheesecake. Wares don't scare me. Who the fuck are you?
Calm down, both of you. Jill, he's one of ours. He's a tracker from out on the Brightwater Reservation. Saul, come out and introduce yourself. This is Mikhail's student.
I kept the guns trained as the wearer moved cautiously forward. He was a long, rangy man. His dark hair, shoulder length and left loose. Dark eyes flicking down my body to where the water lapped at my thighs and coming back up again. He had the classic wear face. High cheekbones, red-brown skin, thick eyelashes, chiseled mouth. He looked Native American, like most American wares. Native American on the cover of a romance novel, that is. A really bodice-ripping one. Jeans and a hip-length leather jacket, a black t-shirt stretching over his chest, the healthy, clean scent of ware mixed with the stink, and I was abruptly conscious of being dipped in fetid goo and wet, almost clear through.
Saul, dust circle.
Jill Kismet.
I lowered my guns, holstered them both, measured him for a long moment.
I am not going to say it's a pleasure.
Then I rounded back on Harp.
What the fuck is the Martindale squad doing down in the drains in my city, Harp? Without contacting me, I might add?
Left you a message yesterday. You been busy?
That's the goddamn understatement of the year. Oh, I should have listened to messages this morning. I knew there was something I missed last night. 5 cops attacked out on the drag last night. Montaigne called me in. Something that smells goddamn awful and has a habit of cloaking itself. I repeat, why are you in my city?
My nerves were a little thinner than I liked. This disturbed me badly. Something that smelled that terrible should not be able to disappear like a hellbreed could. Plus, I was covered in guck, and they looked cool and imperturbable like wares always do. To top it all off, I'd sensed hellbreed. I knew I had.
Just keeps getting better.
Easy, Jill. We just blew into town a couple days ago and had to wait for Saul. We've been trying to reach you.
Her eyes met mine. I suddenly had a very bad feeling.
We have a rogue ware.
Some days, the worst part of the job is cleaning up. I tossed the damp towel in the hamper, buckled my harness on, and stalked out of the bathroom. My coat was dripping in the utility room, having been hosed off thoroughly, and I suspected I was never going to be able to get my boots clean again. So I was barefoot, in a fresh pair of leather pants and a Jonathan Strange t-shirt, the weight of the harness comforting against my shoulders and back.
This place is a sty!
Well, Mr. Dust Circle doesn't think much of my housekeeping.
Wares are inherently domestic, and my empty fridge was probably scandalous to the country boy. If he was fresh off the res, he probably hadn't had much contact with hunters either. Most res wares take a dim view of humans, and hunters are only tolerated because they're good backup when the scurfs start infesting again. At least I was fairly sure we weren't dealing with carnivorous bits of contagion. I've never faced a scurf infestation myself. God willing, I never will.
Don't get snitty. She's a good hunter. Mikhail Tolstoy trained her.
She stinks of hellbreed. And she's not one of us.
I stepped out of the hall, my fingers falling away from a knife hilt.
Will you shut him up, Harp? That country shit is getting on my nerves.
Harp stood at my breakfast bar, and Dust Circle stood in the kitchen, his hands loose at his sides. The female ware poured Jack Daniels steadily into one of four chunky glasses. No ware strategy session is without munchies, unless the situation's dire. And JD was as close to food as I possessed.
Dominic went to get some takeout. I wanted to ask you, Jill, could you put Saul up while he stays in town? I would, but we're at the Carlton on expense account, and the pencil pushers in accounting don't look kindly on such things.
Why can't he stay in the barrio? It's rude of me, but hey, he just called my house a sty.
Which it probably was, to a ware.
I at least scrub my own toilets.
Because he doesn't have kin in the barrio, and because I don't want to worry about you while this is going on. This neatly solves both my problems.
Worry about me? What do you think I've been doing out here, holding hands and having bake sales?
Heaven knows I live to solve your problems, Harp. Quit fucking around.
I don't take in boarders, especially ones who can't even insult me to my face. Stashing with Galena, that's what a sanctuary's for.
I restrained the urge to rub at my right wrist, wishing I'd had time to drop by Galena's and take a look at the new copper cuffs. I could smell the alcohol in the glasses, and I badly wanted a jolt.
What, and have a rogue battering at her front door? She won't thank me for that, and even if it doesn't matter to her, it'll endanger everyone who pops by. Besides, I want to keep this quiet, and everybody and their mother goes to Galena's. Come on, Jill. He'll behave, I promise.
Harp scooped up two of the glasses and stalked over the bare wooden floor to hand me one. Her skin was warm, aware's higher metabolism bleeding heat into the air.
Let's sit down, shall we?
Help yourself.
I indicated my ugliest sin, secondhand, orange, naugahyde couch.
Come on, Harp. Spill. Even if it is a rogue ware, what the hell is the FBI doing in on it? Rogue wares are the responsibility of regional territory holders in conjunction with hunters.
Harp settled herself
on the couch.
The
Norte Luz pride should be in on this.
I downed the respectable dollop she'd poured me, felt it burn all the way down, and stamped over to the counter and snagged the bottle. Dust Circle eased around the corner of the breakfast bar, eyeing me disdainfully. He smelled faintly of cherry tobacco and cigarette smoke, and he was much larger than me, being aware. His gaze met mine, flicked down my body again. I loudly ignored him.
Well? Come on, Harp.
The rogue has crossed state lines, and his kills are disturbing. Very disturbing.
You know, when you say disturbing, I bet it means something totally different than when I say it. Would it have anything to do with the way the trail keeps vanishing? Or with the hellbreed I keep smelling?
You'd know all about that, wouldn't you?
Oh, he doesn't like being dismissed. You going to muzzle him, Harp? I settle down cross-legged on the floor near the couch. I'm not as patient as McEel when it comes to dealing with little boys who bark too much.
Jill made a bargain with one of the resident powers in town. With Mikhail's support and approval, I might add. She's a good hunter, Saul. Either be a polite little kitten or shut the fuck up, will you? I would hate to have to call your mother.
I'm not a kit, Harp.
He picked up one of the drinks, paced smoothly across the room, and settled down on the floor about 6 feet from me, facing the couch. There was no other piece of furniture in the living room except the lamps. Big, antique iron things that had stood in Mikhail's bedroom once upon a time.
I apologize, Hunter. I haven't slept much, and I'm impolite.
By wear codes of etiquette, that was a bare-throat submission. I stared at him for a good 30 seconds. The mellow shine of electric light in his hair was tinted with red. Forgotten. And forgiven. Nice to meet you. Which, by wear codes, was a magnanimous refusal to prove my dominance. That earned me a startled glance, but I turned my gaze back to Harp, who wore a wide, white-toothed smile. I touched the back of my right wrist, scrubbed at it with my fingers. Touching the scar wasn't a good time, so when I had it uncovered for a while, I rubbed at the back of my wrist, a nervous tick I was helpless to stop. But one nasty comment and he's out the door. I haven't been half-drowned in storm-drain shit tonight to take Lip from a wear you can't babysit. Now start talking. The side door opened. I smelled food and wear. Dominic made no attempt to keep quiet. Wise of him. Harp knocked back her drink in one smooth motion. I poured myself another.
It started out in Massachusetts. This rogue is ranging further than any I've ever seen. The kills look strange. Very strange. About 3/4 of the kills are irregular rogues. Tracked from a resting site, muscle meat gone, a high level of violence, souvenirs taken. The other 1/4 are, well, too savage to be aware. Blood for the hell of it and no muscle meat taken.
Dominic padded into the room.
That Thai place on 72nd is still open. Go figure. Your plate's still in the same place, Jill.
I didn't know there was a Thai place on 72nd. Trust aware to know where all the munchies are. Everything's where it should be. Drop the other shoe, Harp.
He's killed 2 hunters already. Devin Blue in Boston, and Jean-Francois Roche in Louisiana. Saul's sister was running backup for Jean-Francois. Our rogue killed her. It was a hell of a fight from what we can tell.
Holy shit. My eyes jagged over to Dust Circle, who was staring into his drink. Killing another Ware's sister is a big deal. The only thing bigger is killing another Ware's mother. It's one of the few completely taboo things among them.
No wonder he's in a bad mood. I'm sorry.
Boston and Louisiana were too far apart for a regular rogue. They tend to stay in familiar territory, which makes them easier to track. Rogues are normally completely predictable, behavior-wise, at the mercy of instinct run amok. To have a rogue acting unpredictably was bad, bad news.
Or it isn't a rogue at all. But if Harp says it was...
Saul glanced up, and I thought I saw surprise in his dark gaze before Dominic came out with plates and chopsticks, carrying 2 large plastic bags as well.
Chow time. Kiss, you need to eat. You look like you're trying to diet yourself to death.
Don't call me that. Chili pepper and coconut crawled up into my sinuses and made themselves at home. You got everything 4 stars again, didn't you?
Live it up, baby.
Dominic handed me a plate and a pair of wooden chopsticks.
We've got the files and you might as well start looking at them. You know the city better than we do, and we'll need to start checking everywhere a rogue might go to ground.
I caught the look he flashed to Harp, and was suddenly sure there was more.
If it's a rogue ware, why is it acting unpredictably, and why does it smell like hellbreed? But only sometimes.
We don't know. We were hoping maybe you'd have an idea. Operations suggested bringing you in, and when the trail veered this way, we thought we'd pick you up.
Suddenly, more about this made sense. Dominic plopped down on the wooden floor between me and Saul, and Harp slithered off the couch to sit with us, folding her long legs up with inhuman grace. Warm air swirled, touching my cheek, their skins throwing out heat like sidewalks on a summer day.
Shit. Sometimes I wish I couldn't hear what people aren't saying.
I set my plate down, my skin going briefly cold, laid the chopsticks across them.
They want to talk to Perry.
No way, Harp. He'll eat you alive.
We just want to ask some questions.
Dinner first. Eat, then argue. Come on, Kiz.
Hellbreed don't like wares. And this one's different. He's not your average shiny-eyed weirdo.
Give me what you want to ask him about. I'll take it in. I've got to go in there anyway. I might as well. And the more business I have to handle, the more I can put off going in there to make my monthly payment.
My skin chilled afresh.
We're curious about this Hellbreed, Jill. It's a golden opportunity for the squad to find out what's going on inside his little domain. We have half a dozen cases he might have his fingers in, and nobody can get close enough to even snap a picture of him.
That should tell you something.
I poured another healthy cupful of JD, set the bottle down, and tossed the whole glass back.
Jesus Christ, Harp. Don't push this one. You know better. McEil would tell you the same thing. It did tell you the same goddamn thing.
Not even a meeting in a neutral place?
Perry doesn't do neutral, sweet cheeks.
No, Harper. Not a chance.
I had to ask. Operations feels it's a priority.
She dropped her eyes. She looked so lovely and languid. It was hard to believe she could shift and tear an ordinary human to shreds in less than 15 seconds.
Two submissions from as many wares in under 10 minutes.
It was a record of sorts, but one I didn't feel good about setting.
You can tell that snake to slither back into his hole. I'm not taking you to see Perry. I can barely keep my own skin whole around him, and looking out for you is a distraction I don't need. You know how Hellbreed feel about wares.
I decided it was time for a subject change.
So we have a rogue ranging out of accustomed territories, a quarter of the kills not following a rogue's standard pattern, and the stink of Hellbreed. A Hellbreed manipulating a rogue ware, maybe?
A rogue ware is hard to control.
Bingo. Easier than a ware with his wits about him. You said something about files, Harp?
Yeah. But not until after we eat.
The night's young. I'll peek at the files, and then you can start canvassing the barrio while I go through the Hellbreed clubs. I want to find out what Hellbreed's tangled up in this. Or we're just shooting in the dark.
A rogue should be predictable. And we've missed something. But regardless, we should hunt him first.
You've done a bang-up job of catching this predictable guy so far. And for your information, Ware, I am the resident expert when it comes to hunting Hellbreed.
Is that why you smell like one?
Harp already gave you my bona fides, country boy.
I counted to 10. It didn't work, so I counted again. Harp's hand had paused halfway to her mouth, as if she wanted to clap it over her lips, but couldn't quite make it there. Dominic's chopsticks were in midair. My pager buzzed against my hip, clipped to my belt. The damn thing was waterproof, which I alternately vilified and blessed. I glanced at it, barely seeing the number.
Perfect. Just what I need. Duty calls. Harp?
Jill?
While I'm gone, will you teach the country boy some manners? My job is hard enough without assholes complicating it. I presume you have a copy of whatever file you want me to face Perry down with? Leave it here. Lock up when you're done.
I turned on my heel and stalked away. My teeth clenched so tight my jaw ached. They were silent. I was hungry. And my coat was still sopping wet. Great. Avery held the bag of ice to his face.
Don't say a word. Not one single fucking word, Kiss. I'm warning you.
I dangled the bottle of beer in my right hand.
I'm not saying anything, Avery. I'm not even thinking it.
Liar.
Avery's leg was tightly bandaged and his throat bruised. Here at the downtown jail, below the five stories that held the normal criminals overnight or during trials, this corridor terminated in three rooms, each with a circle scribed on the floor. Sometimes, they were empty for 2 or 3 days at a time. Then, there were nights like tonight. 2 exorcisms referred in by the 2 Catholic parishes, 1 by the local Methodist church, and another 3 dragged in by Eva and Benito, 2/3 of the regular exorcists in town responsible for doing straight ripping stuffs. Wallace was visiting his mother in Idaho, and on a busy night like this, I could have strangled him, though he needed the vacation. Regular exorcists shouldn't do more than 2 a night. It's draining psychic and physical work. And for anything out of the ordinary, they were supposed to call me in. Avery had tried to take on his 3rd exorcism of the night by himself, and I'd arrived just as the possessed, a meek little morbidly religious shut-in on Benton Avenue, who was even now unconscious inside one of the holding cells for the night, did her level best to tear his eyes out after chewing his leg open and throttling him. She was lucky to still be alive, as I'd had to tear the possessor out of her in a hell of a hurry and drag both her and Avery downtown for some medical attention. Possessors are nasty little things, and once an exorcism gets referred, it's almost a given that they've wormed their way into someone with weeks of effort, driving them crazy a little bit at a time. Most of the possessed have no memory of the whole time. Big chunks of their life gone. Maybe an unconscious reflex, the psyche shutting away the trauma of having a parasitical psychic rider. It's one of the biggest violations imaginable. Your mind and soul, not your own. And the fact that possessors, the little worms, tend to prey on the religious and naive, not to mention the middle to upper middle class, isn't much of a comfort. For once, the poor aren't targeted by a species of hellbreed, but that was small reassurance at best. Plus, possessors find it easier to slide in while the ambient psychic temperature is fermenting hot. Like, right after one hunter passes away, and a new one takes his place. All in all, big fun. I took a long drag off the beer. It was ice cold, filched from the small fridge under Avery's desk. The same desk I leaned my knee against as I eyed him. Technically, you're not supposed to have alcohol anywhere near you on duty, but exceptions were sometimes made for exorcists. You don't last long without a drink or 2, or 6, in this line of work. Wrestling on the floor with a woman who was no doubt very nice and sweet when she didn't have a possessor inside her just made a cold beer go down that much better. She'd gotten her teeth in my throat, worrying at the band of the sternocleidomastoid muscle. If she'd been true hellbreed, or even traitor, that might have given me a problem. But possessors are the low end of the hell pool. I could handle 5 or 6 of them on a given night without getting tired like a regular exorcist. Still, more than 1 or 2 a night wasn't good for anyone involved.
How you doing? You look pissed.
No, what I am is tired. Though I just had a snotty-ass ware country boy run his mouth off about hellbreed at me.
New case.
Heard about that. 5 cops?
Yeah. I don't even know if that rookie survived the night. No matter. If he wakes up and he's coherent, Montaigne will buzz me. Christ, Avery. Jesus Christ.
You'll get whoever it is. If something ever happened to me, you'd kill the bastard that did it.
You're right, Ave. I am the Avenger. It's my job. But Jesus. Let's hope that never happens. I'd hate to have to train your replacement just when I've gotten used to your silly punk ass. He shrugged, one corner of his mouth lifting painfully. He would be bruised all up that side of his face tomorrow.
Hand me a beer, will you? And tell me what's really bothering you.
A flash of his pale chest showed through his torn shirt, and the St. Anthony's medal glittered briefly on its silver chain. I opened the small fridge and passed over a fresh cold bottle. His skin briefly touching mine. The scar on my wrist throbbed. Dawn. A hunter always feels it. The sun rising and the city settling into daytime geography. Yet another night spent on the run.
Jesus Christ!
I knocked back the rest of the bottle in a few long swallows.
Why don't you get a cell phone?
As many times as I get dumped in water? Or shot? Or hit with levin bolts? Can't afford it. Pager works fine, and the buzz won't give me away when I'm playing a snake under a rock.
I unclipped the pager, setting the empty bottle down.
Avery's desk always looked about to disappear under a mound of paper, and he'd stuck slim candles into the bottle mouths, some burned down and others pristine. An exorcist usually ends up eccentric. It's the nature of the job. Eva paints and gilds hollowed-out chicken eggs. Benito likes hanging upside down in a gravity rack. Says it helps him sleep. And Wallace likes going out into the desert for jaunts with only a loincloth and a canteen for company. The number on the pager blurred as I blinked at it. It took a while before I could talk again.
Fuck.
What's up?
Gotta go.
It's past dawn. You should be all right for a while. Call if you need me.
I have to go see him anyway. But he shouldn't be calling me, damn it. Oh, Christ, why am I so upset?
It wasn't just the prospect of going into the Monde Nuit. I did that every month.
She stinks of hellbreed.
That's it. I smell like hellbreed. Like the very things I fight.
Usually, I ignored the point successfully enough to function. Thanks to a stinking country boy ware, I now had to think about it.
Ugh.
I stood up.
Another parade of heart-stopping excitement brought to you by the Santa Luz Exorcist Squad. I'm going to see Galena, have her fix this eye. Don't forget about Saturday.
I strode away.
I'll see if I can squeeze it in.
The ruby warmed in the hollow of my throat. I was grateful for that warmth. It crawled down inside me. And as I hit the stairs at the end of the hall, one exit and entry for any exorcist's lair, it works out better that way. I looked down at my left hand. The ring was there. Silver still bound tight around my third finger.
Mikhail's promise. Mikhail's mark. Given to me before I even knew Perry existed.
I felt anger, and I fed it with every last scrap of energy. I knelt in a back pew at Mary of the Immaculate Conception, my forehead against the hard wood of the seat in front of me. Candles flickered dimly. And despite the simmering heat of mid-morning outside, it was cool and quiet in here. My pager had stopped buzzing.
Get it together, Jill.
There was only one thing to do, and I was putting it off.
Thou who...
I heard Mikhail's voice next to mine as he taught me the prayer.
Thou who hast...
I couldn't say them out loud. So the words unreeled in my head as I forced my shaking hands together in tight fists.
Thou who hast given me to fight evil, protect me, keep me from harm. Grant me strength in battle, honor in living, and a swift, clean death when my time comes. Cover me with thy shield, and with my sword may thy righteousness be brought to earth to keep thy children safe.
A tall order, even for God. In a fight between God and Hellbreed, I'd rather have a good stock of ammunition on my side.
That's blasphemy, Jill, no matter how much it helps. But you're damned anyway, aren't you? What does it matter?
I lifted my face. The crucifix over the altar was a gentle one, not like the screaming monstrosities I've seen in some churches. This Christ looked almost tranquil, as if there had been no pain at all, as if death was a balm and not something to fight tooth and nail against. Maybe that's what Mikhail saw in me. Fighting tooth and nail, like a ware. Tooth and nail.
So I stink of hellbreed, do I? Well, it keeps the innocent safe. Or safer, at least.
That's the trouble with the prayer. Even if you only mouth it, you end up doing it. Believing in it. Stupid. They call us heroes. Idiots.
I didn't want to think about that. If I started brooding about how much I missed Mikhail, I might inadvertently give Perry an opening.
And nobody wants that except Perry himself. Thou who... Thou who...
I could not frame the middle part of the prayer.
There's only one part that matters anyway. Oh, my Lord God. Do not forsake me when I face hell's legions. I've had enough of being forsaken, God. You think you could cut me a little slack?
Run. Running my brain like a rat in a cage.
You're not too tightly bolted right now, Jill. Maybe you should do something to take the edge off.
But what? I dropped my forehead down again. I breathed in, smelling incense and wood and candle smoke. The particular mix that means Catholic. Get out your guilt and your rulers and your smell of wax and wine, and you had my childhood. Or at least the part of it that gave me the reflex of prayer. As a hunter, I was barred from both confession and communion for the sin of murder repeated every night, not to mention trafficking with Hell's minions. But I could still pray, and I would, by special dispensation, be buried in hallowed ground if there was enough of me left to bury.
Unless I died contaminated. Or unless, like Mikhail, I wanted to go into Valhalla with flame licking my bones.
The anger rose again, tattered and threadbare, and I petted it, coaxed it, mauled over it to give myself strength. Rage was my best friend, for all I kept it a banked fire most of the time. You cannot fight effectively if your head's full of anger. You have to think past the rage. Let it fill you and see the world in front of you as action and reaction, with your own path laid clear and shining in front of you.
Oh, fuck. Get going, Jill. You have shit to do and a rogue wear to catch. Get out there and kick some ass. You've done it every month since you made the bargain, sometimes twice, and you're still here. You smell of hellbreed, and you're tired, and your temper's a little frayed, but you're still here, goddammit. Now get up and go twist Perry's arm until he gives up what you want, and teach him to stop fucking with you. Be unpredictable.
I pushed myself up into the hard wooden back of the pew.
Oh, my Lord God, do not forsake me when I face Hell's legions. In thy name and with thy blessing, I go forth to cleanse the night. Though it's more like mid-morning.
I reached the end of the pew, genuflected, and turned my back on the altar. I dipped both hands in the holy water, lifted its coolness to my face. A thin tendril of it rolled over the scar with a tracer of acid fire. I wiped the holy water in my hair, smeared it over my shoulders. I got going. The Monde Nuit is a long, low building, and it sits in a bruised depression of etheric energy. The silver on me warmed, responding to the contamination of hellbreed in the air. The parking lot was mostly paved, but the far edges were gravel, and a spindly, thorny edge of greenbelt looked sucked dry, clinging to the edge of contagion. I had left my Impala parked in the fire zone and headed for the door, eyeing the bouncer. This early in the day, there were only 6 cars in the lot, not counting mine. One was a low black limousine, its windows blind with privacy tinting, pristine despite the dust and haze of the day. My coat flared on the edges of a hot afternoon wind. This close to the desert, up on the fringes of the valley the Rio Luz kept watered and kind of green, everything smelled of sand and heat. I kept my hands loose and easy. Touching a knife now would show nervousness. Weakness. You never show a hellbreed any weakness. It's a cardinal law, not to be bent or broken like so many other laws. The bouncer didn't stop me, though his was a face I hadn't seen before. He was a massive slab of muscle with a flat sheen to his eyes, and he didn't quite meet my gaze. His submachine gun, slung on a leather strap, was a flagrant violation.
God damn it, Perry, you son of a bitch.
My heart stopped pounding by the time I palmed the doors open and saw the Monde's interior, vast and cavernous during the day, no shaft of sunlight piercing its gloom. Nightclubs always look saddest during the day, and even though the Monde pulsed with the glamour of hell, it was still a broken sight at this particular hour. Dappled bits of light sliding over the deserted dance floor, the tables all empty, and the electric lights on overhead. 2 janitors, ancient, decrepit, broken things that might once have been traders, shuffled aimlessly, pushing brooms. The massive bar was off to the left, and as usual, Riverson was there, his blind, filmy eyes widening as he took me in.
Gizmond, you're here.
He reached behind himself for the bottle of vodka.
Score one for you, blind man, stating the goddamn obvious.
I kept the words behind my teeth. Mikhail had brought me in here to meet Riverson, who, for a human with no taint of hell, was extremely knowledgeable about hell's citizens, not to mention still alive to be questioned. Both incredible achievements. The blind man hadn't been blind back when Mikhail first met him. But by the time I saw him, he was a scarecrow with a shock of white hair and those filmed, useless orbs that seemed, nevertheless, to notice a good deal more than most of the sighted ever would. And the first time I'd come here, Perry had shown up at the end of the bar, looking very interested. Mikhail had almost drawn on him, but Perry made an offer. And a few months later, I'd sat in a chair with Perry circling me, negotiating the bargain that made me able to do what I do so well.
Murder, chaos, and screaming. Hey, when a girl's got talents.
I took the shot Riverson had poured. I'm early. I'm here on business. Put it on the tab.
You can wait up in the office. You're finishing the meeting. Kismet, for God's sakes, don't.
A meeting, huh? Wait in the office? I don't think so. Perry, your meeting's about to be adjourned.
By making a statement here, I could probably find out something useful. I stalked through the open maw of the building, skirting the dance floor and aiming to the left of the stage. The painted black door opened smoothly. I found myself in a back hall, lit with red neon tubes along the ceiling. The light tinted everything bloody, and I strode down the linoleum.
Perry, you have been a very bad boy.
The scar prickled, a fiery, loathsome tendril of pleasure twining up my arm. I'd had it uncovered for so long, it almost felt normal.
Almost.
The door I wanted was at the end of the hall. I approached it.
Sumen atusutsunev ameopa ultrevdamina maukun mude oge tu otu per oge.
Sumod mus oge silem.
Helatong, the language of the damned. Do it quick, Jill. Just like ripping a band-aid off. Do it hard and quick.
The door, blank steel, no knob on my side, was maybe 3 yards away. I gathered myself and skipped forward 2 long strides, kicking it inward and adding a generous portion of etheric force, pulled through the scar on my wrist, turned hard and hurtful, a bruised swelling. The steel crumpled, smashing inward, and I rode the motion down as the door crashed into the floor. Two of them, one on either side. I took the first with a quick upward strike, smashing him across the face with a hellbreed strong fist braced by the handle of my whip. The gun was in my other hand. It smashed the shells of both hellbreed. The whip struck. And I uncoiled in a flung wide kick, both boots smashing hellbreed flesh, one on either side. They folded down, both of them stinking now that I'd shattered their shells and dosed them with silver. And the whip coiled itself as I landed, both feet striking the battered curve of the door again.
Well, as entrances go, that wasn't bad.
There was a long table polished to a mirror shine, and tasteful sconces along the wall with yet more red neon, dyeing the air with crimson. Candles flickered in branched iron candelabra, their warm glow somehow bleached. At the end of the table, Perry sat in a high-backed iron chair, the red velvet of its cushions contrasting with the pale linen of his suit. His face, under the expensive sandy blonde haircut, was bland and uninterested. But I thought I caught a steely glint far back in his pupils. His fingers were tented together, and he didn't look surprised to see me at all.
He never does.
Gathered on either side of the table were other hellbreed, none as bland or unsurprised as him. The damned are always beautiful, and these were no exception. Black leather, exquisite silk, frayed lace, glittering liquid eyes and sculpted lips. 4 or 5 had leapt to their feet on seeing me. The table was full, except for the seat directly to Perry's left. And there was another surprise, oh friends and neighbors. Most of the damned in the room were instantly recognizable. The movers and shakers of the entire hellbreed population of Santa Luz. The maggots every smaller hellbreed answered to in their network of feudal obligation. There was the tall, slow-eyed female who owned the cat club downtown. The broker who ran the influence net out in the financial district. The short, tense male in the black cloth half-veil that did assassinations for one faction or another, according to who hired him first or paid him most. A meeting, and the resident hunter wasn't invited. Why am I not surprised? I took another two steps and leapt, landing cat-like on the foot of the table, the whip coiled neatly in my hand. The gun tracked onto the nearest breed, a slim, dark male with a leather vest over his hard, narrow chest. I suspected him behind a large chunk of the cocaine trade that had recently soaked the poorer quarters with a wave of overdoses from whatever the supplier had cut it with. The current bet over in Vice was 12-8 in favor of simple Drano. But forensics hadn't come up with a verdict yet.
Jesus, with a submachine gun and some heavy-duty sorcery, I could make the world a much better place in about 10 minutes.
The trouble was, there were always more. If I erased this batch, others would move in, and I'd have to threaten them into behaving all over again.
Talk about your futile efforts.
Still, my finger tightened on the trigger.
So many scumbags, and all in one room. Fish in a barrel. Feels just like Christmas.
My right hand bore down on the handle of the whip. The candle flames hissed.
Oh, shit. You should have thought about this before you kicked the door in. Good one, Kismet. Get out of this alive.
But still, for what I wanted, this wasn't a bad situation. Odds were, they knew about a hellbreed misbehaving in my town.
And by getting a little nasty in here, I might be able to avoid nastiness later.
The silver chain at my throat burned fiercely, and Mikhail's ring scorched. The charms in my hair shifted and jingled. I took another few steps down the table, bracing myself as my eyes came up and met Perry's.
So good of you to join us, Kismet.
It was like a slap of cold water across a dreamer's face. The other hellbreed blinked, shuffled, one of the females baring her teeth. I stilled, looking down at her. The cat club figured in one or two cold cases I wanted to get to the bottom of as well, though its owner usually followed the rules.
Do we need another example here? Because I'm just aching to teach you motherfuckers the rules of operating in my goddamn town.
I locked gazes with the hellbreed female.
You want to repeat yourself a little louder, bitch?
There's no need to be rude. You were, after all, invited to this meeting.
I must have missed the engraved invitation.
Our eyes locked, two magnets pushing against each other with invisible force. Pure repulsion, or so I hoped.
We called this meeting today to address extraordinary circumstances.
5 cops out on the drag, dead. The scene stank of the damned. Hand over the breed responsible and we'll all get along just fine.
The wet, icy silence that fell warned me. One corner of Perry's mouth lifted, and a chill worked its way all the way down to my bones, except for the scar. The mark of his lips on my skin warmed obscenely, burrowing in toward the bone. I suddenly wished I'd been able to get out to Galena's and get another copper cuff. Without the bar of blessed copper between the scar and the outside air, I was wide open to him fiddling with it.
You are all dismissed. Spread out through the city. Find the one we seek.
Wait just a goddamn minute.
I thumbed the hammer back.
I didn't give any of you permission to move, Pericles.
My heart began to pound, and that was very bad. They could all hear my pulse, just as I could hear the subliminal rumble of Helitong warping the walls and the strings of energy below the surface of the world.
We are already apprised of a hellbreed causing trouble with the police. We are seeking her even now.
Her?
Perry's smile was full-fledged now. He wasn't hurtfully beautiful like the other hellbreed, which made him, once you thought about it, even scarier.
Much scarier.
Her name is Chenchi. I will tell you all we know, my dear Kiss, after you have paid me my due.
Oh, fuck.
I wished I'd thought to stop by the warehouse and pick up the FBI files. They would have made an excellent excuse for keeping the meeting all business.
Like he's going to be fobbed off.
You just cost him some face time in front of his little lieutenants. Wonder of wonders. My pager buzzed. The other Hellbreed rose to their feet from the small iron chairs. All of them shuffled out, avoiding the dead bodies at the door. The masked one watching me with eyes blank from lid to lid, black as the devouring darkness between stars. I ignored it.
If one of them moves on me now, it'll give me cause to get the hell out of here without spending quality time with Perry.
I wasn't as comforted as I could be by the thought. As soon as the last one had left the room, I lowered my whip. The gun swung around, fixed on Perry, while I dug in the padded pocket. The number displayed on the pager's display couldn't have been more welcome.
Montaigne. Which means there's another body. Or three.
Which also meant Perry would have to wait. Guilt curled hot and acid under a bald edge of relief.
What does that say about me that I'm glad about someone's murder because it'll get me the hell out of here?
I looked up from the pager, trying not to let the relief show. It was useless. He saw it anyway, and his smile broadened.
It's the police. I'm on the job, Perry. You're going to tell me what you know now, and I'll come in and pay you when this is over.
I have waited an entire month for the pleasure of your company, and I don't intend to deny myself that pleasure any longer.
Tough.
The gun settled, pointed right between his eyes. He wasn't a low-level grunt like the breed at the door. If I popped him in the head, it might just make him angry.
Bodies in the street take precedence over our bargain, Pericles. You know that. Start talking.
I could talk to you for hours, dear one.
The scar throbbed. The heat in my lower belly dipped down.
He's doing it again. Using the scar to fiddle with my internal thermostat and mimicking the physical aspects of desire.
It had to be a mimicry.
Whore! Just like a goddamn whore!
Had he guessed that's where I was weak? How much did he know about me? About my past?
Stop it. McGill made you stronger than this. Don't let Perry get to you.
I set my jaw. He liked playing with the scar while I was near him. Each time I visited, it was the same. Him messing with my pulse and my nerves, trying to make me respond.
At least I won't have to use the flechettes this time. Or my whip.
Most of the time, he liked to be strapped down. And he liked to be cut while he bled the blackish eye core of Hellbreed. Sometimes he would even talk while he made me cut him. And that was the worst. The closest he came to worming inside my head was while I was frantic with loathing at what he told me to do, cursing myself for ever making the goddamn bargain, despite anything Mikael ever said.
Come on, get me out of here. Stick to the point, Perry, or I'll track it down from the other end. That'll mean I won't come in when it's done, since you've refused to help.
When have I ever refused you anything, Kiss? I could give you so much more than you've ever dreamed.
The lights dimmed, darkness spilled through the air. Silver shifted in my hair. The chain holding the ruby was a thin thread of fire, the ruby setting hot against the hollow of my throat. It had never singed me yet. But each time I wondered, my legs were shaking. I braced my knees.
Cut the crap. Give me what you have on this Hellbreed. That's my final word, Pericles.
Oh, you're no fun. All we have is her name and her general description. Fair, but with dark eyes, and for some reason, allied with a were. Surprising, no? She is far from her master and should be returned, which we have undertaken to do. We cannot, after all, have our vassals going about with animals. It destroys the general sense of order so necessary for a smoothly running society.
Why is she hanging around with a were? And a rogue one to boot.
My mouth was parched. The fumes of the Jack Daniels I'd taken down reaching my head. I hadn't eaten. My body was starting to get that funny, shaky feeling it usually did just before Perry ordered me to strap him into the frame and start. I knew that shaky feeling. It's the same thing as when your body rebels and tries to collapse on you, but your mind won't let it. Sometimes he wanted the knives. Most of the time it was the flechettes. Razor sharp and silver plated. On a few very bad nights, he made me use my fists until his preternatural skin broke and bled. And the only sounds would be my sharp exhales of effort. and his low, bubbling breath right before he gurgled more. Just the single word, each and every time. I'd given up wondering why he wanted me to hurt him. Maybe it was just another move in the game he played, trying to get inside my head. Maybe he couldn't get it anywhere else.
If we knew, Kismet, I would not be allowing this show of defiance from you, however charming I find your homicidal little displays.
He waved one elegant finger at me.
When I receive more information, I shall bring it to you. Personally.
Who's her master, then?
A certain gentleman in New York. One who is most displeased with her disobedience, and intends to teach her a lesson as soon as she is returned to him. See what a very good boy I am being, my dear. And all for your sake.
He pushed himself up to his feet, very slowly, his eyes on mine the entire while. New York. Jesus. The master of the Big Apple's hellbreed was so old and frightening, I'd heard even the city's contingent of hunters steered clear of him. I hope the one looking for this hellbreed is just a smaller fry from that pool. Fine. Thanks for the information. Slowly. So slowly, my thumb came up and uncocked the gun. It took all my fading courage to holster it. If this pans out, I'll have the mayor give you a medal.
Stay with me for 10 minutes, Kismet. Only 10 minutes. I will forgive your visit this month, and wait until the next, if you stay with me for that short while.
This was something new, and my busy little brain started worrying at it, trying to decipher his angle. You'd give up this month's visit for 10 minutes now? He stood at the end of the table, looking up at me. 2 candles snuffed, then another 2. The light darkened, even more bloody now. I should have felt a little better, having the physical high ground here. I didn't.
10 minutes now, and I will forgive your payment on our bargain this month. My word on it, Kiss.
I don't suppose you'd forgive next month's, too. That earned me a sardonic look. Fine. Starting from when I came in the door. I backed up, hopped off the table without looking.
Come here.
He's not even quibbling. This is a bad sign. He indicated the seat on his left, the one that had been empty.
Sit. There.
I walked slowly. More candles snuffed. I looked at the chair, tested it with 1 finger, and sank down in it. The ruby at my throat sparked a single bloody point of light in the charged silence.
Good.
He lowered himself down in the tall chair.
Put your hands flat on the table.
I did it. The mirror shine surface cold and slick under my sweating palms. The last of the candles died. I was alone in the neon-lit dark with Perry and 2 rotting hellbreed corpses by the door. His hand came down over my right wrist.
Be still.
His skin was warm and felt human, except for its supple invulnerability, like metal made flesh. The shell of a hellbreed. Hard to breach without a lot of luck and firepower.
Silver. Lots of silver. And lots of luck.
Have you visited your teacher's grave?
Mikhail's grave. Where his ashes were buried in consecrated ground, its headstone with curved Cyrillic script scored deep into granite, hoping to last a little longer than other more perishable things, like flesh or memory.
This is all part of Perry's game, trying to worm his way into my head. Less than 10 fucking minutes, and I'll be free for another month.
Answer me, Kiss. Have you?
Yes. His thumb moved a little. A slight, flexible movement. The mark jolted another wire of unhealthy heat through me. If I looked down with my smart eye, I would see the mark flushing with power, swelling with corruption.
And
what? Don't, Perry. Keep your fucking mouth off Mikhail's name.
Did his ghost rise to comfort you?
No.
You need some small comfort.
His thumb moved again.
You allow me so little. I could help you so much more.
If this is a sample of your help, I'll go my own way, thank you. He hadn't asked me a direct question. I could get away with silence. It was the safest course. Perry's fingers suddenly bit down on my wrist. The pain was almost a balm.
Why do you make this so hard?
Make what so hard?
Think of what it could be like if you sat here with me at your right hand. Imagine what I could do with you to direct me. There's nothing I wouldn't do for your asking, my dear.
You're Hellbreed. It was all I needed to say. If I bit into the apple of that offer, the snake wouldn't be far behind. It was the same old song. Take a little, then a little more, and before you knew it, you were up to your eyeballs in filth. Your own, and a good deal more.
What makes you different, Jill?
I knew what. Mikhail made me different. And as long as I was true to him and what he taught me, I was on the side of the angels. Figuratively, of course.
God needs killers as much as hell does, I guess.
Maybe more.
What kind of hell breed?
I don't know.
Ah. All I ask is that you turn a very little kiss. Just a very, very little.
It was a jolt of cold water. He could fiddle with the scar and try to worm his way in all he wanted, but Perry was just too fucking impatient to crack me. And I wasn't a stupid teenager anymore, ready to believe anything a man told me.
Just a little bit. I've heard that line before. Just do something small for me and I'll give you everything you ever wanted. How stupid do you think I am, Perry?
I set my boots against the floor, tensing in every muscle.
We have our bargain. You won't get anything else from me.
As soon as I said it, I knew it was a mistake. My wrist ached as Perry squeezed. A fraction of a hellbreed strength enough to make sweat break out along the curve of my lower back.
I have enough time. I've broken stronger traitors than you.
So I've heard.
Since I'd already pissed him off, I might as well go with it.
I'm not a traitor. I'm a hunter. And one day, I'm going to kill you too. When I do, Perry, I'm going to throw a party afterwards. Hell, I'll have it catered and bring out the barbecue. It'll be a red-letter day.
His fingers eased up on my wrist, caressed the back of my hand, and finally slid between mine.
How can such a small touch feel like such a violation?
I tried to yank my hand back, but those gentle fingers turned to steel again. And pain tore through the hard knot of the scar as he pulled my hand up, turning the palm toward the ceiling and bearing the pale glimmer of my wrist under the pushed-back cuff of my coat.
Naughty, naughty!
He'd made me react.
Good for him.
His mouth met the scar, something cat-rasping against my skin. A brief caress. I set my jaw, my neck aching with tension. His breath was oven hot and swamp wet against my skin as I went rigid in the chair, an invisible knife twisting in the scar, tangling and ripping at nerve strings. At least it was pain this time, and not the sick, gasping sweet heat of the first time his lips pressed into my flesh, his aura injecting a nugget of corruption into mine. Pain can be controlled, even if it's your skin being torn off 1 millimeter at a time. Even if it's the nerves themselves turning traitor and running with hot acid. Immediately, he let go. His head coming up, his fingers sliding free of mine. My hand fell limply to the table and I slept.
God, I wish I could kill you. I need to get up, empty a fucking clip in your body, flick my whip, and hear you scream like an Arceus.
You may go. Unless you want to stay, my dear. I'd like that.
Fuck you. I managed to stand.
I won't be back until next month.
Kill him. You can do it.
It might not be easy, but you can do it. The rest of me dug in heels and resisted. If I killed him now, I'd be violating the bargain. And I knew what that would make me in my own eyes. Just as bad as the things I hunted, that's what.
Well, you'll see me before that. Tell your friends from the government I'm hunting their little problem, too. We'll be quite a cozy little bunch, won't we? Like family.